Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's February 21st, 2014. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott New Mexico Long.
Hey, buddy, what's it like out there?
Oh, I love it out here. No, seriously, I can't rave about where we are right now. We're at Inn of the Mountain Gods. It's really out in the middle of nowhere. They'll be the first to admit that. It's about a 3-hour drive from Albuquerque, a 2.5-hour drive from El Paso, and nothing else near it.
Wow.
But we're at the top of this gorgeous mountain. I just went for a hike. And the resort here is just phenomenal. And everybody we met here is really great. So I really hope they give me a reason to come back. And even if they don't, I think I'm going to come back on my own.
Do they have an airport nearby?
Well, yeah, either El Paso or Albuquerque for major service. I'm sure there's some local private field for the whale healed. But okay. Yeah, it's fairly remote, but it's super nice out here. And they had a $5 comedy show last night that was worth about $4. So. But no, we've had a great time out here and headed up to Albuquerque as soon as we get done with the show and back home to Florida tomorrow. So it's been a good trip.
Sweet. Very good. Well, why don't you tell everybody the real reason why you went out there?
Yeah, absolutely. I started on this trip last Thursday, flew out to Sacramento, California for our very first Ante Up Poker Tour event of 2014 at a phenomenal place, Cordova Casino. It was in Rancho Cordova, right in that Sacramento metro area. And I got to tell you, I told a lot of people on this trip, pictures don't do places justice.
Yeah.
You really got to get out and see these places. I mean, obviously in the Mountain Gods here, photos are gorgeous. But, I mean, just looking over the mountains and the lake here, you just can't even describe it to someone. Cordova the same way. This is just a great little lodge casino in the middle of this great office park, real clean and nice and very stylish, you know. I know a lot of our listeners are in California and playing card clubs, but folks that haven't visited card clubs, not a lot of them are super modern, and I don't feel incredibly comfortable in a lot of them. Good poker, but Cordova, it was just it's very, very nice how they did it there. A great restaurant there, good food, a huge beer list though for all my beer friends out there, and. This is a property that hasn't had a lot of poker in the last couple of years. I think they opened 4 years ago, tried poker, didn't work, and then so they're trying to get back on the map, and called us up and said, hey, we want you to come out and do an Ante Up Poker Tour event. And they were on pins and needles, I think, leading up to the event, but we were very excited that they sold out both flights for it. Got every alternate in that wanted to get in, and just had a fantastic event out here. So I want to congratulate Chris Augustin, the champion. What a super great guy. Yeah. I hope my interview did him justice because he was just very, 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 very nice. I mean, if all poker players were like this guy was, everybody in the world would love the game. Just got out of the corporate world, got tired of it. I think you and I can appreciate that.
Right.
You get tired of working 13-hour days. I'm wishing that we could get to that point at some point ourselves. But no, he's done really well for himself in life, I think, and just got tired of it and moved up to the Sacramento area. He and his girlfriend had never lived there before, loves it. Now he plays poker every single day, tournaments, and they have a little boy on the way here in a couple weeks. And what a great gift for the kid here, a nice championship title.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was thinking when you sent the story, and I'm like, wow, what a great story. You know, he's expected father, you know, quit the corporate world, and now he's, you know, on the cover of a magazine and playing poker for, you know, for whenever he wants. And that's just, it's just a great story. I'm so glad he won.
Yeah, and you know, we love when we do these events because, and particularly this property, like I said, they really just wanted to get on the map, and they thought this was the way to go. We certainly agreed with them, and just to get there in the morning and see just a line of people walking in this place. A lot of them had never been there before or heard of it, and I'm sure they're going to be back, and they're looking forward to doing some bigger events going forward. They want to get this one under their the belt right now. So we had a lot of fun out here at the. I know a bunch of our listeners had emailed, a bunch, I should say, but that's a bunch for yeah. for not being in Florida.
Yeah,
a lot of our listeners had emailed me that they were going to come out and see us, and it was great. I got to single out Carol Simpson. She came on our one of our cruises a couple cruises ago. Lives out here in California, or lives in California. I'm not in California anymore. lives right. in California up there. Flew all the way to Florida to go on our cruise and brought her great grandsons, who are both baseball pitchers, with her. And she came out and played, and I was rooting for her because she showed up and she gave me a signed baseball card for her oldest grandson, Jeff McKenzie, who played his first year of pro ball last year in Great Falls, Montana. And it was autographed, and I got to say, I know a lot of our listeners know I'm a huge baseball fan, travel all around. I don't believe I've ever had an autographed baseball card before in my life.
Wow.
My first one.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I was really excited about it, and so it was great to see her. She's just such a blast. I'm hoping we'll get her on a cruise again soon. Had a couple long chats with a great new listener of ours, Jeff. He just started picking us up about 6 months ago, and he just raved about how glad he was to find it. He's a former MMA fighter who's now a middle school teacher. Actually, I think he's always been a teacher, but he also used to fight in the local MMA circuit up in the Sacramento area. And so that was great to talk to him about that and talk to him about being a middle school teacher. I mean, there's no middle school teacher in the world, I think, get paid enough to deal with the kids that age. He's just soaking up all the knowledge. We actually sat there with a couple other folks and just talked poker for half an hour, and he was just soaking up all the knowledge, and that was great. And a couple other folks came up and, hey, Scott, we really appreciate what you guys do on the podcast, and thanks for having this event. So, you know, that always makes it worth flying all the way across country.
Well, I bet those 11-year-olds really listen to the Jeff. I mean, you know, you're telling an MMA fighter. Those kids are not going to goof off.
The Kevin James movie that I refuse to watch, you know, the Here Comes the Boom or whatever.
Oh, the wrestling one, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's MMA, so that's what I was thinking.
Oh,
like,
okay, yeah. See, I never saw it, so I didn't know. Was it? That was what it was? He was an MMA fighter in it, not a wrestler?
Yeah.
Oh, geez, even worse.
Supposedly, I hadn't seen it.
Okay. But overall success, right? I mean, it sounds like everyone was happy, and it was pretty exciting. It was nice for us, too, because it was the first time we ever did something like that on pure deadline for the magazine.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that reminded me of the old days when we worked at the Times, when you did that every day, you know. Whereas here, we have a rough couple of weeks, or I do, you know, with trying to get the magazine out. But it's not like that gut-wrenching, oh, my God, I got to get it off the floor, I got to get it off the floor, I got to, you know. Here, it was just like that. It was like, I need to release the pages today. The press is waiting, and Scott's story's coming in tonight. And so it was kind of exciting. You know, got the blood, you know, pumping again and whatever. So it was cool. It was nice to have that event and to put something that fresh on the cover like that, too. So it was cool.
Yeah, you know, I'm out there talking to a ton of managers on this trip, too, and, you know, telling them all the stuff that we do. I mean, people are still amazed. It's just a really, for all intents and purposes, a two-person company. And all the stuff I do, and I'm like, gosh, you know, sometimes I just miss writing, and so that was cool. It was cool to write it on deadline too, and they forced to put together a story that quickly, and hope you get the right interview. And you know, it's always funny because you sit and watch the final table, you know, and I had stories for like three or four of them already in my head, so it's just a matter of which one's going to end up winning.
Right.
And I think what was really interesting about this tournament too is that they had two starting flights the day before. Brought back 25% of the field for each of them, so they restarted with 32, I think, at noon. I didn't leave the casino until after 11 that night, and I banged out that interview and story pretty quickly. So it was a long day, too. People really got a lot of play out of that tournament. I got down to five-handed, and they did a chip count chop, which I know is all the rage now, but I've never actually seen one before. So someone actually had to paid the $1.99 to download the IE or whatever
the app
so they could figure it all out. And then you assume, you know, hey, now they've chopped, and it was an even chop. I mean, not an even chop, but a chip count chop, right? So people that had the bigger chips got, you know, the bigger money. And then they played it out for the seat in our world championship in the cover. And I really thought that once you got down to that chop, it was going to be, it was going to go super quick at that point. It didn't. It dragged on. Those people wanted to play. They wanted that seat. They wanted that cover. And that was kind of cool to see.
Yeah, that's pretty significant. I mean, a $1,600 seat and then the cover. I mean, it's not chump change that you're playing for still. So that's understandable.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the biggest payout was like $5,400, the chip leader at the time of the chop. So, you're adding another a 1650 seat that's going to have easily a $250,000 prize pool. That's definitely something worth playing for. And then, of course, hey, the cover's nice, right?
Yeah, the cover, of course. So that's pretty cool. And it wasn't some sort of shove fest, which, you're kind of hoping it is when you're on deadline like that. But at the same time, you're glad they weren't going to be discouraged at the end and go, it wasn't worth it at the end or whatever. They got to get their play in, and that's pretty cool. So, while you were gone, I was getting into trouble myself. So I thought maybe I'd bring this up because when we first talked about it the last home game, I was a little frustrated with certain things. So, we introduced Courchevel to the home game for the first time last time we were at your house, the last home game. And Dr. Frank said, hey, I want to have a home game. And it sounded real interesting because he wasn't at the last one when you guys played Courchevel. So I want to play it in my game. And we said, all right, that's cool. So one of the gripes I had was when we were playing it just limit and they had that little teaser card that you put out first before you do the rest of the flop, I felt like we were making fun of you at the home game for calling it that. It's this sort of teaser card that really helps your decision whether or not you should play the hand or not.
Sure.
But when you're playing a limit, if you can't even really protect that flopped set or whatever it is because it ultimately is Omaha with five cards. You're like playing Big O, but you got this little teaser thing going on. And so I was whining, like I always do, that maybe we should make it PLO. So now we go to Frank's house. Frank calls it, and he's like, what should we do? Should we make it PLO? Should we make it no limit? Should we make it, And I'm like, well, and then Don, one of the newer guys in the game now, he's like, I don't think PLO's a good idea. And I'm like, well, I couldn't protect those hands. And he's like, yeah, but you were playing crappy sets, And I wasn't going to go anywhere because he was the one that really punished me at the end. He'd catch on the river, I think, two or three times against me at your house. He's like, I don't think I really would have gone anywhere, even if you had bet pot, because we were playing 25-cent blinds, and, I had a good starting hand, and that just happened to back into a bigger hand at the end, which is why I nipped you or whatever. And I was like, I don't know, Don, if I kept firing pot, and he's like, I don't know. So let's play PLO. And they're like, all right, so not PLO, but pot limit. And we did that. So a couple of hands were pretty uneventful. And then this hand came up. Now, we're playing, I think, eight-handed. Is it eight or seven-handed? I think it was eight-handed at the time. And, this is another thing, too. I don't want to get too far off track, but I feel like when you're playing in a home game where you're buying in for, say, 100 Skittles, and, you're playing 2-4, to go to 25-cent blinds, which is what we do, and it kind of makes sense, but it's like it's not that difficult to get yourself into trouble now because you're used to betting $2 and $4 or whatever you want to call it on streets. Now, if somebody bets pot when there's three quarters, two quarters in there, they're making it $1. And so you're like, well, I'm not going to fold for $1. That's not even that's the small blind in the other game. It's not even a full bet. So, if they bet pot and then if they bet pot again, you're looking at $4 or something, and you're thinking, well, that's only a big bet in limit hold'em in this game, or limit Omaha, or whatever. So I'm going to probably see a flop here if I have a speculative hand. So you can really get into a lot of trouble playing this game, and not only that, but when you shrink the blinds down to 25-cent like that, it's like you really get into trouble because it doesn't really seem like you're how hard is it to speculate for $1? You got to train your mind to think, all right, well, there are two more streets, and actually three if you think about it, because you get the teaser card first, then you get the mini two flop, and then the, whatever. So I'm not really sure, and I'll tell you how the hand went, but I'm not really sure if PLO is the way to go or not, but it feels like it is because this was probably the biggest pot we've ever had in our game. So I think I was in the blinds on one of these hands, and I in this hand, and I had like 2, 3, 5, 6 jack, and I had two clubs, a jack of clubs and one other club. I think it was the five of clubs. So the little teaser card came out, and it was a nine of clubs. So I thought, well, I got backdoor clubs if it's important at all, but I'm in a blind, so I didn't have. So somebody bet pot, but it was only a dollar, and then someone who called. And so for me, it was like 75 cents to win $4 or something. So I'm like, it's only a dollar. I'll speculate. I speculated. The flop came, and everyone else came along. So I think we were like seven-handed or so to the flop, or to the, yeah, to the mini flop. And then, yeah, because it's hard to, it's not really, it's weird. It's weird what to call it. So then it came like four of diamonds, ace of clubs. So now when the person raises pre-flop, they raise just on the teaser, you know, they probably got a set, or they probably got a nine in their hand with some other stuff, but generally it's probably a set. And someone did raise pot here, and of course it's Don. So I thought, well, here's my chance to get revenge on him, you know. And the mini flop brings the ace four, so I'm looking at, I've got now four clubs, and it's not the nuts, which I know you should always worry about in this game, but I'm just saying it's not the nuts. Yeah. But if I had to back into it, you know, somebody could have two sets or something, and I'm backing into a flush they don't even have. So that came into my mind, but I also have absolutely the most nut and low going that I could get. I have every single card around it. I can't get counterfeited, like, at all.
Right.
So I think I actually led out here to just whatever. But I'm not sure. I can't remember the complete action, but I know that when it got to me, I made a bet that was significant. So here's the deal. So on this flop, it goes something like bet, raise, re-raise, call, re-raise, re-re-raise, call, call. All right, so at the end, four of us were all in, okay? And we had, I mean, we all had like about 100 in front of us or so. Some had more than that, though. So by the end, before we even got to the turn, there was over 400 units in the pot, whatever you want to call them. So easily the biggest pot we've ever had, I think, in our game. Because, I mean, we've very rarely had No Limit Hold'em go, you know, two guys with 200-plus in front of them getting it all in. That's, like, never happened in the history of our game. So right. In PLO, I mean, we've had some big PLO pots, but ultimately there may be 200, you know. It was just sick, and it was like the third hand going in, and I just couldn't get away from it because I had four clubs in case someone didn't have clubs. I don't know if somebody would go in with just clubs, so I didn't think they would, so I thought maybe the clubs would be good, but I had the nut low going all through, and I was already down for the day, so I wanted to get my money. You know, I'm trying to get in there and mix it up a little bit. So it turns out that Don did indeed have that set. But Frankie had pocket aces, and that's why he kept coming along before the flop, the mini flop. So he had top set of aces, so he couldn't fold. He got it all in. And then Kevin in our game had the king of clubs and another club, and he had some low cards. So so he stuck around. And then, of course, me with now with the worst clubs but the best low draw. You know, and I'm not doing it for just half the pot because I'm still thinking that my clubs are good or could be good, you know, or whatever. Oh, I still got the wheel, too, to look at. It's not just right. Clubs.
Yeah.
So we get it all in, and it turns out that it goes, like, eight and then, like, jack. So the nuts ends up being whatever the nut ended up being 7-10. If somebody had 7-10, they had a nut straight, no flush got there. And Frankie ended up just having a set of aces, but Don had 7-10 in his hand, even though he had a set of nines. Again, the river blesses him, and he makes the straight and gets half. And then Kevin and I both made the nut low. He ended up having deuce straight in his hand, and we made so we chopped the nut low. And I just couldn't get away from that hand. But if it was limit, I don't know how that hand would have changed, but we certainly would not have gotten it all in, I don't think, because there's no full house there, so Frankie couldn't have gone crazy, and you know what I mean? But I mean, it was a sick, sick pot. And I'm trying to figure out, are we playing this game for sick pots, or are we playing this game to outplay each other? Because there was no thinking involved after this flop. I mean, it was just like everyone got it all in. And I was really hoping that the board would counterfeit somehow so I'd get the whole half myself of low. But it ended up being precisely his deuce tray worked. If the tray or a deuce came on the end, I still had the nuts and he didn't. But
well, you know what I think about deuce tray in that game, so.
Yeah. Well, that was a bizarre thing, though. This was pretty routine, I think. I mean, it was nothing else came up. Just his, he had deuce tray and I had deuce tray, but I had the other cards to go with it. And I don't know if I should have gotten away from that hand. I don't think I should have. I ended up breaking even, I think, because when you put Frankie's money in, I mean, how does that make him feel? He has top set going in, and there's really only one draw that he has to, well, I guess two, the wheel. But, I mean, he has top set going in. How do you fold that? You can't, right? And he ends up finishing, like, last.
Well, yeah, I think that's the reason not to play a pot limit, because at least in a friendly home game, because I think those kind of pots are going to happen quite often. I mean, maybe not to that extreme, but they're going to be pots that are bigger than what we I was comfortable playing with, because I think we all play bigger elsewhere. Yeah, but in the home game, we try to keep it so, you know, no one loses the mortgage.
Yeah, right.
And I think just the nature of that game lends itself to a lot of all-ins at some point, or a lot of, you know, pots and repots, just because there's so many options. And you get the fluffer card that gets you all excited. You get you get an extra card in your hand. You're going high. You got low. There's just a lot of hands that have a lot of possibilities. And I guess probably the answer is to play a little bit tighter. But I think human nature doesn't allow you to play as tight as you should in that game. So I think playing at pot limit, it's a way to get huge pots if that's what you're looking for. But yeah. I think it's probably a safer game to be played limit. And you're right. I don't know really how it would have developed a little bit more. But I go back to the beginning when you're worried about protecting your hand. Again, that's not what we're supposed to be doing in limit. So. It's just a different type of game, if it's play limit or pot limit.
Yeah.
But I would definitely encourage, if people are thinking about playing at home and playing a pot limit, to play it at the lowest level that you possibly can, because even at the lowest level, I think you're going to end up at some point getting stacks in during the night at some point.
And that's the other thing, too, is I think I need to just go back in time, like I did with when we first started playing our home game, and remember, hey, if you're going to play at limit, you got to play it like you're playing limit hold'em, and don't go crazy trying to protect. Just, ride the storm and figure it out. And then if you've got the best hand, you got the best hand. You know, the way I used to play it, I'd have pocket kings and I'd raise and get frustrated when you'd call with 5-6 and make 2 pair on the river on me. And I'd be like, I got kings. And you're like, yeah, I know, it's limit. And I'm like, So, and the other thing too is the blinds. I think playing things pot limit would help if the blinds were much bigger. But then if the blinds are much bigger, you have to have a much bigger stack. So there's this sort of catch-22 with the blinds. So you just got to be really cautious with the way you're playing this game.
Well, it ends up being effective stacks at the table. So, look at your island. I mean, quarter-quarter in that game, you're probably – anybody with 100 Skittles in front of them is probably at risk at some point, which sounds pretty sad, but I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. So it was a lot of fun, really the Courchevel, I just don't know. I think it probably is limit is the best way to go. So we'll see what happens in the next home game. But everybody likes the game. I mean, they're all, except for Faso. Faso didn't want to play it, and Mark was a little, hesitant. But because I don't think he liked it the last time he played it either. But it, tell you what, it's like a carnival game, but it's not. It was fun. So. All right, listener spotlight. Each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 813-448-1120 or emails us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with our Call the Floor and Hand of the Week segments, we'll send them something fantastic. This comes from Todd Falstad, who was on the show recently, I think, too, wasn't he? He was just on a little while ago.
Yeah, he's actually sent us a lot of good stuff. Yeah, so we're going to hear more from him in the coming weeks or months.
Gotta like having listeners who contribute tons and tons of content for us. That's a beautiful thing. So he wants to know, do bad beats exist? Whoa. This is This is like transcendental or whatever you want.
We got Destiny coming up.
There we go. Or is it more about hand selection, he wants to know. I always have to suffer the stories at brick-and-mortar tables. And to make it worse, a lot of East Coast casinos, such as your favorite down there in the Tampa area, even encourage chasing them by offering huge jackpots that keep the tables full. Like a sort of a big Powerball draws a crowd to a local convenience store. I love that. Similes. Man, he's got it all in this letter here. Does a big bad beat eat jackpot change your plans to spend time at the tables? Or even more important, how do you play certain hands? So I don't play enough anymore where there are bad beat jackpots and things like that where it's affecting my play. So I'm not really sure how I would answer it, but I think I would probably chase things a little more. So I think the bad beats do exist, though. I think that they're still bad beats regardless of the knowledge of what is going on around you.
I would agree that the bad beats do exist, but I think far too many of the bad beats are exactly what he's talking about, hand selection and in these jackpot kind of things. You know, when you get sucked into you jack five and you flop jack five, six, and then the guy rivers his set of kings, you know, who had the bad beat there? You know,
yeah,
you really should have been playing that hand, but you know, there's a huge bad beat jackpot, so you're going to play it, and so you feel like it was a bad beat when it wasn't. So, I think a lot of people will over extend themselves on what actually a bad beat is. I think in the past we've talked about this. I mean, certainly if you're playing in Florida, you got to learn how to play the jackpot game here, because it's just what it is here in Florida. I mean, every room, not just here in Tampa, but every room in Florida at this point is dropping about dropping $2 for a jackpot drop. So, you know, that's the way they compete. You know, high hands, you know, $500 for the high hand every 10 minutes or whatever crazy thing that's coming up. It's not always a bad beat jackpot. In fact, actually, a lot of those smaller ones, I think, encourage even sloppier play. And I'm certainly guilty of it. You know, I try to avoid playing like the 1-2 no limits in Florida because of that. But, you know, when I'm just killing time and playing a 2-4 limit, you know, how am I not going to get away from any suited connector if I know there's a high hand for $500 coming up, you know? So I think probably the best answer to this question is when you're in a room where they have a lot of these jackpots or promotions and things, you know, you got to understand I hate to say it's not poker. A lot of people down here like to say it's not poker, it's bingo, but it's not. It's poker. It's just a different kind of poker, and you have to adjust your game. I mean, it's part of always being a poker player, you know.
Right.
Every time you sit down at the table, you've got to assess the table, you know, who's playing there, how long they've been there, whether they're drunk or not, how long you've been there, how they play, and what things are influencing their play, and adjust it accordingly. So it's really just an adjustment thing, I think, is the bottom line.
So to answer his question, do bad beats exist? Yes. Or is it more about hand selection? Yes. It's both. really is. I mean, it's hand selection and there are bad beats. It's just depending on what poker you're playing. You know, when you're just playing straight, there's no promotional poker around you and you're an 80% favorite and you lose, it's a bad beat. Or when you're playing promotional poker and someone else has selected a terrible hand to play and they back into a still a crappy hand, but one that beats your favorite hand, it's still a bad beat, but it was more about hand selection there, that's all. So I think, it's just adjusting, really, all it is. And I do remember a few times playing in a casino where, you know, there were, there was one hand I played at Caesars in Vegas, I regret, where I had, like, ace-king of hearts, and it came, like, queen-jack of hearts on the flop and a ten of clubs. And I had the absolute nuts with the redraw to the royal, which would have got me, like, $500 and a jacket or something. And I played my opponent rather than the promotion, and that was a mistake because I had seen her, you know, I had seen her not believe anybody when they bet the flop, just call, so I bet out, and she folded. And I was like, argh, you know, I mean, why did you fold? Take your cards back. And they're all laughing at me, like, why did you bet? And that's what I get for playing the scenario, I mean, you know, the person rather than the scenario. So It definitely, you have to adjust with how you play your hands and depending on what's going on around you. Hey, guess what? We got a brand new O'Malley's move after taking a week off. So here we go. Here comes part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week starts a series of three hands played at a rather large no-limit hold'em game. Keep in mind, the stakes are way above what we're comfortable with, so the decision process is skewed slightly. This particular game is a 10-20 no-limit hold'em cash game. We've overextended ourselves and bought in for over half of our total bankroll, $2,000. We currently sit with $1,790. There are eight players at the table, all of them fairly decent. The under the gun and the plus one folds. The MP calls, and we're in the hijack with the six of spades, six of clubs. We limp, everyone else folds to the big blind, who checks, and we go to the flop with $70 in the pot. It comes down the jack of hearts, ten of spades, six of hearts. The big blind checks, as does the MP. We really like this flop, so we lead out for $50. The big blind folds with little thought, but the MP calls. This guy is a bit of a loose cannon. He currently has nearly 3,000 in front of him, but his stack has gone through some pretty drastic swings. He'll play almost any two cards, within reason. There's about 170 in the pot, and the turn is the 10 of hearts. The MP leads out for 100. We like this card. It could have completed his flush, or maybe he has a naked 10. However, if it is a 10, we're vulnerable to a lot of river cards. So we elect to protect our hand. We raise his bet to 300. The MP wastes little time in shoving his remaining stack in, which has us covered. So we've got an underfull. However, this bet not only represents what we've got in front of us, but it also represents half of our entire bankroll. We're now regretting this overextension. With all that in mind, what's the move?
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. So remember to send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. Long-time listener Big Guru has sent this one in. He's playing PLO 8 online. So I love that I can drive you crazy two times in the way, Chris.
Man, I tell you. I think you guys do this just to, intentionally, just to tick me off.
This will be a little bit of an adjustment here because he does his little computer snapshot program thing where he sends to us, so I don't get all of his feedback because I can't look at both at the same time. So bear with me as you get through, but it's an interesting hand, I think.
Right.
So let's see. Our hero is on the button, and we have under the gun folds, and then we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 limpers.
Wow.
Before it gets to him with ace of clubs, seven of hearts, deuce of clubs, deuce of spades. And I forget what our stakes are here. Looks like we're playing a 10-20. 10 cent, 20 cent maybe.
Okay. I think that this is probably...
All right, it's a tournament. I'm sorry. It looks like a... Well, yeah, let's just say it's 10-20. We'll keep it easy.
All right, so it's 10-20, but we don't know if it's cash or if it's tournament, right?
Yeah. Well, it says real money, but I'm not sure what that means. But anyhow.
Right. Well, we got someone else's deuce in our hand, which is nice because now we're taking out their chance of making the low on us. Plus, we have a nut flush combination. We also have a set combination if that deuce does come. And we're probably going to lose to another low, half the pot, but if we make a set of deuces, not too bad. Not great, because you don't want a babysit in this game, but it's not great. But you still have that as a backup. Seven is an emergency low, in case somehow it works out. And we're in position, too. So that's really good. I like to bet pot here, since we have the ability now to make a decent-sized bet here. You know, if there's five limpers, there's a dollar in the pot already, or 100 in the pot, depending on what game we're playing. You know, so you could actually call the 20... and then bet 120, so roughly. So, I mean, that's a significant raise in this game, it seems to me. You know, if you can make it 140 now, I would do it, you know, because you got a nut flush, you got a nut low, you have a set possibility, and you have an emergency low. I think that this is probably a raising hand.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a raising hand. The amount of the raise is what I'm wondering. The problem is we got so many collars. If you do the traditional, 2.5x, 3x plus a collar, you're looking at 80, 100, 121, 40, 160, so about. Right. It's going to be a significant raise no matter what you do. So at that point, I guess maybe you just go pot. I'm not sure exactly what pot would be right there.
That's what I said. I think it's 140. I think because it's five limpers would be a dollar. You could
it's going to be more than that because he's going to be able to raise more than that. So
okay.
So he goes ahead and raises to 120, which I'm guessing is pot. And you got so many limpers in there. It's going to be interesting to see when anybody calls. I mean, at that point, this is a weird hand because you've got so much potential to win a big pot with this hand. But at the same time, you've got so much dead money already in the pot too. So. So one of these scenarios where I think raising pot, I'm happy to take it down now because there's a lot of money in there. And if I get one caller, even great, or even two callers, even better. But yeah, I can't see us betting anything less than what we're betting here.
Yeah, because we said five limpers, right? So that would be there's a dollar in there already. So if we bet pot, we'd put 20 in, that'd make it 120 in the pot, and then we'd be able to raise 120, so it'd be able to make it 140. So he's bet a little less than pot. I probably would have bet more. I would have bet 140, I think. I would have bet the whole pot. Right?
Well, he bet 170.
Oh, he did 170. So that means the other blinds were in there too, then the small and the big were in the pot. So,
well, they count that as part of the pot.
So that's probably what it was. So 170, because you said 120 when you said he raised 120.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, so it was 170. Yeah, so that's what I would have done. I would have bet the max.
Okay. Well, that's what he did. You get the blinds out of the way. And one, two, three, four callers.
Oh. Wow.
That's probably not what you're hoping for.
No, and of course, again, this is micro limits. Whether even if it's a tournament, it's still, they don't get a lot of respect, I guess, at this low level. So that could be one of the reasons why you get so many callers, too. And it's PLO8. People see a lot of promise in their cards when they have two ways to go with it plus four cards in their hand.
So, I mean, really, the situation here now, it's going to be tough to avoid getting all in. At this point, because the pot's just so huge at this point.
Yeah.
So now we're going to have to hope for a pretty nice flop, I think. All right. Well, the flop does come 8 of clubs, 5 of diamonds, 10 of clubs. And I think that would probably constitute a pretty good flop for our hand.
Yeah. I mean, other than, say, quad deuces or the nut flush already or a wheel already, and even a wheel would be not the nuts. So, it would just be the nut low. This is a pretty decent flop for us. We were drawing to the nut low and drawing to the nut high, and there's a lot of money in the middle, and we're in position. This is pretty sweet.
It's also a tough flop, too, because we don't have anything right now.
Right.
We have so much potential here, and don't get me wrong, I'm ecstatic about this, but you know we're going to put in a pretty nice bet here, and it's on the come. And if we miss on the miss either way on the turn, then we know we're probably going to have to put another big bet in. So that this is what I think where people don't like the pot limit Omaha 8 or pot limit Omaha in general is that you're making the right call putting these big bets in, but it's just so tough knowing that you're not there yet.
Let me ask you, though, if you miss on the turn and you're in position here and you had made a big bet on the flop and got a couple callers or whatever is going to happen here, wouldn't you check behind? Because
absolutely,
you
I would. Yeah.
Okay.
If they give me that opportunity, sure, absolutely.
Okay. I just want to make sure that if they've got, because you know you're going to take control of this hand here, they may check to you on the turn. It's probably not going to happen because it's hand of the week. But I'm just saying, if they did, you would check behind.
That there's so many people in the pot right now that it's going to be tough to assume he's going to get checked around. But yeah, absolutely. If he gets after I make our decent bet here, and we still have so many people in. And checked around to me, and I miss? Absolutely. That'd be ecstatic. I'll take that free card every day.
Yep.
All right, so let's see. First act checks. Actually, it checks around to us on the flop.
And what's in the pot, like $6?
I'm going to say a pot size bet's going to be around 600.
Yeah. All right.
A little bit more, maybe.
So I would probably bet about 5 or so, maybe 450 or 5. I don't have to bet pot here, I don't think. I think a regular bet is still significant, and
You know, yeah, I'm sorry. I guess it's about 800 in the pot, so I'm sorry.
All right, so I'd bet about six.
Okay.
Five and a half, six. Because it's still a legitimate bet. I mean, just because it's pot limit doesn't mean you have to bet pot. It's not pot mandatory, Omaha.
Yeah.
Playing. It's pot, you know, limit. So.
Well, the reason I like betting that much here, too, I mean, we're not there yet with anything, right? But aside from up against a set right now, it's hard to imagine anybody else is really anywhere right now. You know, if you got some people with club draws, that's great because you get the best club draw, almost the second best club draw. I guess that's a straight flush possibility.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You got the nut low, and then you're right. The biggest part of this hand for me is that extra deuce blocker that we have, which makes it less likely that somebody else has the ace deuce. So we'll be chopping that low if anything but an ace or deuce shows up. So I've got a lot more confidence in this hand now. And, so, you know, if I bet pot here, we got enough people in the pot that we have to bet pot here. And, I'd be ecstatic to get one call, maybe even two calls here.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And, we're hoping for a gin card on the turn too. It's probably isn't going to happen because hand of the week, but,
Though. I mean, if they checked around here to us on the flop, they might be predisposed to check around to us on the turn, and that's great. So then we'll get to the river. And then the great thing about getting to the river for free is if we totally biff on the river, then we're absolutely not going to put any more money in the spot anyhow, right? So,
right.
You know, there's nothing more you can do about it. It's going to suck that we've committed this much money to the pot. But, you know, that's a great way of playing.
So what does he do? Because we were saying about 550 or 600.
Yeah, he bets 630.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
We get two callers and two folds.
Wow. Two callers. That's perfect for us if everything falls according to plan.
Right.
Okay.
If.
That's a big if.
All right, so we're moving to the turn, which is the eight of hearts. So our board now is eight of clubs, five of diamonds, ten of clubs, eight of hearts, and a truly brutal card, I think.
Yeah, that's a really bad card. That stinks. Let's start over. Give me a different card.
So now we're back to what you said. We're hoping that it gets checked around to us, and I don't know whether we're going to be that lucky with the board pairing now, but I absolutely want a free card now and hope that I can salvage my my low, at least get half this pot. And you know, it doesn't mean that somebody has a boat right now, but you know, I'm not ecstatic about my club draw getting there either.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping to see that river for free now.
And are we going to be able to?
All right, let's see. First player checks. The second player moves all in for 700.
All right, so 700. There's 12.
It looks like all remaining players have 700. So this might be, if I think back to this, I think he said this was the first hand of a tournament or something.
And we have about 700 too. It's basically putting us all in.
And the remaining player has 700 as well too. So it's a all in or a fold at this point for us.
All right. So let's look at what we have. We have, if this person has a boat, then we only have outs to a low, because every boat beats us. Even if a deuce comes on the river, every boat beats us. So the only thing we have for the high is a flush that is not going to be good if it's a boat, and we have stake on 50% of the pot if the low gets there, you know, if it's not a deuce, because then we have an emergency low that may not be good. So we're literally calling 700 to win 18, and then there was 5 or 8, so 26, and then the 7, so 35. So we're calling 7 to win 30. So we're getting 5-1 on our money, it looks like, to win half of a pot of that. So half the pot, but there's that. You have to give a little credence to the possibility that your flush would be good if it got there, and he only has 3/8 or, you know, or whatever. Not that it's going to be that, but I think I'm going to go for it.
Are you?
I think I'm going to, because the clubs could still be good. The low could get there. This guy could just have 3/8, you know, and your deuce could be good if he only had 3/8. If you hit a deuce, you'd have a full house that he doesn't have. There are some hands that I can imagine that, you know, we're beating. And the pot odds, I mean, I realize you got to cut the pot in half because you're only going to get half of this if you hit your low. But it could be like the four clubs comes, and then you could have the nut high too. And this, not the nut high, but the nut high against your opponent. Who knows? You know, he could have had clubs and a low draw and just said, you know what, I don't believe this guy, I'm going to shove on him. Who knows? You know, I think there are some points to the winning the high half for us too. There's some credence to that. So if that's true, then I think they're getting the right odds here to make this call. I don't know though. It's tough. It's not my favorite, not my best game either. So, but I would think that I might make the call here.
All right. So I went back to look at the notes. This is actually the first hand of a $1.10 PLO8 sit and go.
Okay.
So if that helps with the discussion at this point on what we do, and actually I think it does for me. But
yeah, if I'm only risking a dollar here of my entire bankroll, I mean, I'm going to take a chance on this, because if I win this hand, if I somehow scoop it, or if I even take a half, it increases my stack pretty significantly. And if it doesn't, then I'm going to be pretty short stacked against what appears to be a pretty decent stack now, and maybe two stacks at this table, because it's pretty early on in the event. So
I might disagree with that. That might be the tipping point of me folding here, because I got 700 left. Blinds are 1020. So I still have got 35 big blinds or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to give up on this hand at this point, but at this point, it's a sit and go, so it's a little different now that I know that. I mean, 35 big blinds and a sit and go is huge. Yeah. Obviously, somebody or two somebodies are going to have a nice stack going forward. But I've got plenty of play with my 35 big blinds in this right now. And the problem is, if I call them out, I mean, again, you're right. If it goes back to it's a dollar, so if we're playing just, you know, for a dollar, sure. If I go in and I lose all this, then I'll just get another dollar sit and go. I remember those days. That's great. But I don't think that's a true poker decision, right? That's a level of the game decision. So, I mean, if we're talking about a true poker decision to this point, let's say this is a $1,000 sit and go, you know, well above our means. I'm going to be content to continue on with 35 big blinds, knowing that right now I don't have a hand either way.
Yeah.
And my best shot at a high hand might not be in existence anymore.
See, this gets back to me and the Courchevel earlier. You know, I ended up getting it all in because I had this incredible wrap to a wheel and the absolute nut low, no matter what low comes, if it came. And I got it in, and I probably, I don't know if I should have or not, but I was down already for the day, and I thought this is my chance to maybe even scoop. If I get the low and the clubs get there and the full houses don't, you know, maybe these guys are just playing sets. So I was thinking that I had a chance to win both halves, and that's why I did it. And I still had two cards to come, though. That was a little different. This one only has one to come, but I don't know. Sometimes I feel like when I play these games, I need to gamble a little bit to get a decent stack so that I can be comfortable playing it later. And I don't know. It's probably not the right mindset, but it's the one that I have. And like you said, when it's only a dollar, you know, if I make a mistake, I learn from my mistake because it's a dollar.
Right.
If it's $1,000, I'm, to be honest, if it's $1,000, I don't know if five guys came along for my pot-sized bet either.
Very true.
So,
absolutely.
You know what I mean? So you're playing the situation at hand, just like everything's relative, just like the earlier letter that we had about the bad beats. You know, you got to play a situation that you're in. I think these guys are fantastic players because they're playing a dollar sit and go, and neither am I. I'm not a fantastic player. That's why I'm playing a dollar sit and go. So I think I'm going to take all that to heart, and I'm going to call this guy.
All right. I'm folding.
All right. You're folding. Good. At least we disagree. But I think I can go both ways on this. I don't think that I would disagree folding either. I just feel in my heart that I could scoop this pot. I mean, I literally could scoop this with the right card, with a four clubs or something like that. And I know it's a very narrow way of looking at it, but I mean, any low, I'm getting half my money back, and it's possible that I could still even scoop with a deuce.
Well, it's possible too that we could still get quartered on this low as well too.
That's true.
It's unlikely, I think, because we have the blocker. But I mean, that's the other thing. If you know, we're gambling on our tournament life here on what could be a quarter of a pot, or actually none of the pot really, obviously, but you know, it could be a quarter of the pot.
That's true.
Which, you know, still obviously it would be that a quarter of the pot is probably going to get it better than if we fold it here. I'm going to guess, it could be wrong, but we got to get there. That river card is so important at this point.
Yeah. I mean, that guy who shoved could easily have an eight in his hand and ace deuce. It could be that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, you could be, you know. But at the same time, that means you also have the clubs to you then if he doesn't have the boat. So there's a way to go with all of this. So I feel like gambling today. I don't know what it is. You know, I got into a business with you. That was a gamble. So this this just sounds like my MO. So let's do it.
All right. Well, Vic Guru's on your team, so he shoves it all out there. The remaining player, the third player, also is all in. So three of us are all in for the river, which is the Jack of Spades.
Oh, no.
Brick City, baby.
Oh, man. I knew that was coming.
The guy that initially put us all in shows Jack of Diamonds, Trey of Clubs, Ace of Spades, Deuce of Hearts. So we would have chopped a low had we had got there. And then the other gentleman had King of Clubs, Nine of Clubs, Queen of Hearts, Jack of Clubs.
Oh, come on.
Well, that's an open-ended straight flush draw.
No, I'm in the first guy, though. I mean, why is he now waking up with that eight? What?
Oh, yeah.
What is that turn? The turn? Yeah, the turn is just ridiculous, that bet. I mean, we showed strength pre-flop, and we showed strength after the flop, and then he chooses to bet into us when an eight gets there? Well, okay, so he's trying to scare us, maybe, but that didn't work.
To some degree, I might defend him, because here's the thing is he's got the low locked up no matter what comes. But he's got ace, deuce, and tray. So whatever low card comes, he's got it locked up. Now, of course, he might get quartered, as we mentioned. So you got a little bit of insurance there. It'd be nice if the low was already there, and then you knew you weren't going to get counterfeited no matter what other low card came. But I think there are some players that will know that once that board pairs, that's going to freak out all the club draws. In this case, it did not freak out either of the club draws.
Yeah.
But I could see that play being effective against some players that, you know, hey, I'm not going to – I mean, look, I was already to fold myself because the board paired, and there was no reason for me to now that I'm looking at the hands here, you know. So I might give him a shot at that. I mean, I'm not going to justify going all in there, but, you know, I'm not going to condemn him either. I think there's a little bit of a genius there, probably just not enough.
He's just taking a chance because let's say that, you know, when that board pairs, why would anyone call on that flop unless they had a draw?
Well, that's what I'm saying. He's not trying to get called there.
No, I know, but he's got two opponents. And he's got one guy who was showing strength the whole way. It's like, wow.
True.
I mean, it was ballsy, but it didn't work. I don't see that work. I mean, all you got to do is have one guy with an eight in his hand, and you have to hit your hand to make half the pot now because he's not winning the half. There's no way he's getting top half because no wheel's going to get there. So no straight gets there for him at all. No draw gets there at all. He has no draw. All he's drawing to is a low. Wow, that was ballsy, and it didn't work out. He lost two. So two guys out.
Well, I mean, the flip side of it is, and I'm not trying to defend this guy, but he knows he's got no chance of the high. There's nothing that's going to come that's going to give him a high in his hand, right?
Right.
So if he can scare some of the other highs out because the board paired and then leave himself, you know, in really good shape for the low if it gets there and, you know, you take it down and scoop. I mean, that's really his only opportunity to scoop here is to get everybody out of here. And he's got the low back up in case he does get called. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's genius behind it in the sense that you're thinking, hey, this eight paired the board. If nobody has an eight or nobody has a set, if I bet pot now or shove, they're going to think that I'm protecting my massive hand and they're going to get out with just half a pot possibility to them. But just to me, it'd be one thing if it was heads up. You got that extra player in there, though. It's so hard to bluff two people on one card, and they're both coming along. You would think, or whatever, one of them is going to have that eight or that boat already. You know, you would think, and that's just not that it worked out that they both didn't have that, but still, one guy makes the nut straight, if you can call it that, and the other guy had the same low, essentially, as you of the three, you know, doesn't come, so...
I like the other guy. I want to talk about the other guy in his hand here because this is an interesting situation. I'm actually surprised that he didn't lead the action here. He has a nut straight. Of course, I guess the board's paired. But he's got all kinds of draw. I guess I'm sorry. I forgot the board paired. But,
yeah, the board paired. And he didn't get the straight to the river.
That's tough to get away from, too, when you got an open-end straight flush draw and you've got so many other outs to improve. You got clubs. You got higher straight possibilities and the low. I mean, I guess that's what I was thinking, is he has no low possibility. So, I mean, I'd like to punish the low draws at that point, but it's tough doing the boards paired there.
That was pretty crazy at the end there. I just can't believe the holdings of the, at least the holding of the Jack Ace Deuce Trey guy. That was, wow. Well, you know what though? I mean, there was a little bit of brilliance in that move. So it's just when there are multiple opponents, it's so difficult to get through two of them. And he didn't get through either of them either. They both had hands that were, you know, expected to have in that place. To call that bet on the flop, you know, they have to have something. And to think that one card is going to scare them both away, I don't know. That's pretty risky, but too bad.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel bad for Big Guru. The guy with the ace-deuce trade jack should never been in on that flop for that bet. I mean, it's just, there's just nowhere else for him to go. I mean, you're on a low draw. Actually, you know, you got a really good low draw, but that's a lot of money to be calling off there.
Yeah.
Obviously, the other guy had phenomenal redraw or draws at that point, so he's not going anywhere. So, I mean, I don't think anything would have changed in this hand other than had our hero folded it, where I would have, he would have had 35 big blinds.
Yeah. Unbelievable. All right. Well, I want to thank Cordova Casino for hosting our first Annie Up Poker Tour event of 2014, and glad everything worked out really well. Scott, have a safe trip back tomorrow. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
See you at the table.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.